Welcome to the Future of Tourism Podcast. I'm David Peacock.
Stop owning your own content.
Young leaders are stepping up.
Bring everyone to the table
and imagine their world anew.
As we set our sights on things like regenerative tourism, sustainability, accessibility, and a virtuous visitor economy, the big question is how do we generate the engagement and alliances in our communities that are needed for success? Ross Calladine is the head of business support at Visit England and their in-house accessibility specialist. He and his team have done a magnificent job of reverse engineering accessibility wins so that stakeholders in the tourism community can see real and immediate benefit. They also built and perfected a delivery and distribution model with a keen eye on driving uptake by providing measurable, ongoing value directly to stakeholders. Good morning, Ross. How are you? Where are you? What's it like?
Hi, David. I'm great. Thank you for having me. I'm in Oxfordshire in England. It's a little rainy today. We've had some lovely bright mornings and very crisp frosts, but a little bit of wintry rain today.
All right. Today is the 7th of December. It's a Thursday, but you've already had a big week. On the 5th, you launched the Accessible Tourism Plan Toolkit. Do you want to talk about that for a second?
Yeah, sure. This has been a really big project that I've been excited to launch this week alongside International Day of Persons with Disabilities. So Visit England as the national tourism body for England really wants to equip the tourism sector in England with the resources and the guidance and the case studies to really help them create more accessible and inclusive tourism experiences for everyone. So we set about in January working with a fantastic supplier called MIMA on authoring this holistic toolkit, pulling together lots of guides that we produce with the disability charities over many years and actually bringing it really up to date, plugging those gaps, filling it with case studies, practical tips. And that's what we were launching on Tuesday this week.
So Ross, when you started this, I mean, you've talked to me about this before. You didn't come from an accessibility field. You came from, you came into government to work on this project, but along the way you've done some remarkable things. So let's first tell me about leading England's Inclusive Tourism Action Group. And then we'll talk about some of the things you're doing tactically to drive the uptick of this. So what is England's Inclusive Tourism Action Group?
Sure. So ETAG is a group that I set up in 2015. And it was really on the back of recognizing that if we're going to move the dial as a nation and a set of destinations to be more accessible and inclusive and compete with other destinations around the world, we need to bring partners together and work towards that one shared goal. I saw that there were some really great players out there in the private sector, public sector, third sector, a mix of, expert consultants, people with lived experience. And I built these connections and I just thought that we could be stronger together. So ETAG is about bringing people together, building those conversations, those networks, and driving towards that shared ambition, which currently is for England and the whole of the UK to become the most accessible tourism destination in Europe.
So ETAG's membership or constituency, who's part of it? Usual suspects, unusual suspects.
Yeah. So we've got some of the key players in tourism who are leading strong programs in the access and inclusion space, from Merlin Entertainment running some of Britain's biggest attractions, the National Trust, English Heritage. And then we supplement that with some great public sector bodies and organizations, third sector. So we have a charity called Tourism for All, for example. We have experts in the accessibility space, such as the Business Disability Forum. They do a lot in advising employment of disabled people. The Center for Accessible Environments, all about built environment accessibility, and some really good independent consultants that have been working at the grassroots with the businesses. They, you know, day to day, they're at the coalface advising businesses on accessibility, hearing about their real misconceptions, their barriers, their struggles. So it's a real good mix of people, and we get together quarterly, and it's a lot of sharing, but it's also, we do some strategizing as well.
Well, speaking of strategy, so the, you know, with ETAG looking over the strategy piece with you running it from your desk at the government, one of the remarkable things people always say to me about when they see you speak is how you demystify and simplify accessibility and turn it into A, something that can be attained, and B, something that actually drives business. So talk to me a little bit about what you've learned along the way about motivating and inspiring partners. Now, I know you work on multiple levels. You've got stakeholder partners like accommodations and attractions, but you've also got destination organizations, and you're really trying to help them future-proof. So if you could focus in on that just a sec for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So engagement is the hardest part. You know, I've always said that we or anyone can produce quality guidance. The trick is getting engagement in that guidance. And there is a fear factor. You know, a lot of our industry is made up of micro SME businesses, and ourselves at the national level and our destinations, we have to learn how to best engage those fearful businesses. And those businesses have a lot of misconception, and we have to keep banging the drum to say, yes, the international symbol of disability is a wheelchair, but it's estimated that it's only around 7% of disabled people that use a wheelchair. So if you're a listed bed and breakfast with both your bedrooms on the first floor, you can still make a difference to people's experiences, even if they don't use a wheelchair. Think about sensory impairment, think about cognitive dementia, and the breadth of disability and impairment. So I mentioned that we've launched this toolkit for businesses. What we're also about to launch is a toolkit specifically for our new breed of DMOs in England. And they're to be called local visitor economy partnerships. So Visit England is leading a program to accredit LVEPs. So they are a form of destination management organization. And Visit England will be supporting those LVEPs very closely on a number of key policy areas. And one of those is accessibility. So the toolkit specifically for our LVEPs will be on how to develop and lead an accessible and inclusive destination. And I very much see partnerships and collaboration being part of that. We need to connect our industry, the people leading our destinations and our businesses, more with people with lived experience of disability, because whilst we have as long as we have a disconnect there, we're not going to be able to reach the end goal. You know, there's a common refrain from disabled people which chimes with me, you know, nothing about us without us. And sometimes we can find ourselves getting wrapped up in work and projects where we're trying to deliver initiatives to make a difference for disabled people, but we've kind of forgotten to truly co-produce and put them at the heart of what we're doing. So, yeah, a lot of the starting point for destinations is to form those connections. There's lots of local groups within destinations that are just, you know, crying out for their voices to be heard. They've got so much lived experience to offer. And I see great examples of destinations marrying up and forming fruitful, lasting partnerships with local disability groups, access forums, for example. That's where real change starts from.
Well, I want to talk about the way you present this, because you have a very amicable way of presenting this. And anyone who I've talked to who's watched you present and all the stuff I've watched you do, you really demystify the issue. You start by humanizing the idea of accessibility. And I think the figure you hit me with that hit me right between the eyes was 16% of the world's population will self-identify as having some form of challenge when it comes to ability. Well, that's an unbelievably massive number in tourism, because you look at it and say, that's bigger than the profit margin on most tourism businesses, right?
16% globally. Actually, in England, it's 24%. So, you know, the business case is quite striking. And, you know, businesses in our industry, we have to struggle with major impacts, you know, very frequently, you know, whether it's ash clouds, whether it's, we've had in the past here, a foot and mouth disease, which really decimated rural tourism, whether it's terrorism incidents, whether it's COVID. You know, there are really strong pressures, which mean that we need to make our industry as resilient as possible. And accessibility can absolutely help drive better business resilience. It also drives the reputation. It's a massive driver of a strong reputation for a destination. And who doesn't want to have a great, you know, a great reputation? And finally, revenue. You know, the other R, the three R's. 14.6 billion pounds is spent each year in England by disabled travelers and their traveling companions. So this isn't a niche market. And when I go and speak to businesses, I say, don't be afraid of recognizing the commercial value, because absolutely you should be doing this because it's the right thing to do. You also do have legal obligations, but let's also be proud to recognize that most of us are in running businesses for commercial gain, and the purple pound, as we call it now, is very, very large.
Good. And the purple pound, go ahead, expand on that for us, because I come across that term a lot in your writing.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of thoughts as to where the color purple came from the fact that Tanny Gray Thompson, a well-decorated Paralympian, her favorite color was purple, and she used to wear a lot of purple. But it's really been adopted as the color of disabled people. And there is a great initiative called Purple Tuesday.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, yeah. We're a founding partner. Visit England's a founding supporter of Purple Tuesday. It's a global movement that is trying to shine a light on the importance of the disabled customer experience. And it culminates in a set of pledges by businesses. I think they had over 7,000 pledges made by businesses and destinations to improve accessibility this year. And then there is a day, the first Tuesday in November normally, where there's a big, you know, fanfare. I think they were trending number one on X this year, which they were proud of, and lighting up, you know, as many venues in purple as possible, just to kind of spread that awareness.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. We've talked about your approach, and your approach is very much, if I can sum it up again, demystify what accessibility is, create tangible wins for stakeholders so that they engage, and then go out and as best you can popularize that and build an alliance around it. Now, that sounds straightforward, but here's the drill. In tourism, especially at the destination level, we are hungry for engagement, but I think we've got a bit of an approach avoidance conflict. We really sometimes don't know where to start. You've spent the last 3 years neck deep in engagement. What have you learned that you need to talk DMOs about? Because Ross, I'm going to be really blunt here. I think the next 5 years, the most single pressing issue we have as destination organizations is we either create meaningful, credible, tangible, valuable engagement in our communities, or someone else will come in and supplant us to do it, because there's no way we can continue to have five of everything and six committees for that. So taking the accessibility experience in engagement, what can we learn from it about engaging stakeholders, about building the networks we need to address things like sustainability, equity, and accessibility?
For me, it has to be about driving towards mainstreaming the topic. You know, so long as you try and treat this separately, it's always going to feel like it's an additional piece of work. But just like for the other parts of sustainability, if you can try and embed it in everything, you know, in your culture, in your DNA, and have people at the top of your destination or your organization all the way down to the bottom, living and breathing the principles around inclusive welcome and accessibility, it'll just become natural. It'll just become part of what you do. And like anything in what destinations and businesses are working on, it's a journey. Mm-hmm. You know, in the guidance that we produce, there's no expectation for us to say, okay, and in year one, we expect you to have achieved these actions. Well, no, it has to be tailored depending on your resources, your business plan, what you're working on. And I think it's about just getting destinations and businesses to step onto the treadmill. And once you're on it and you start delivering actions in this space and seeing the benefits, you'll just continue to gradually get through more actions. And then you'll look back a year, 2, 3 years later and say, actually, we've been building some great work here. We've got some momentum. So I think it's about putting the fear to one side, not letting perfect get in the way of good, because we can all be guilty of that. That's something that myself and my team have had to really, you know, come to terms with, because you want to produce the most perfect set of guidance ever. But, you know, we want to move forward and we want to just nudge things forward. You know, we don't have to always think that we can achieve perfection. It's not realistic.
Well, and complete guidance doesn't work. You said it earlier. You go into a destination and it, you know, it's the old war analogy that, you know, the minute the challenge starts, everything, the plan goes to heck. In the sense, every single accessibility plan I'm sure you've ever made is customized completely for the place it's you're working with. Who are the partners? Where are they at? What's their level of development? What's their understanding? Let me talk about LVEPs and COVID for a minute. Two things that may have helped move your file along. You were very, very busy in COVID. You didn't shut down at all. Did the pressures of COVID increase the awareness of what you were doing, or was it just people's open-mindedness? Because I watched your file through COVID, and for 2 years, you guys were nonstop. You probably had your biggest growth as an entity during COVID.
Yeah, I mean, as the National Tourism Agency for England and Britain, we realized that we had a very important role during COVID, and it was to try and support businesses to survive. So it became about survival. Topics like accessibility naturally didn't have as much of a focus during COVID, but we had to really explain that when businesses were reopening and they were changing some of their practices, like they were afforded to, for example, use pavement spaces more outside. Well, that could create and was creating some barriers to disabled people, you know, visually impaired people cluttering up pavements, not being able to get through town. So there was a piece that we wanted to weave, and we tried to weave in with our partners around the impact of COVID changes on this community. But then I think once we've reopened and we're looking to build back stronger, that was part of the message here in the UK. And I think in other countries as well, let's try and build back better. And I think COVID did build a level of empathy that has helped move this agenda along. You know, it's not sympathy. You know, no one in this movement is looking for sympathy, but empathy is very much welcome and should be appreciated. And I think COVID has helped to move the dial on that.
I think that's a really, really important observation. I like the way you framed that. I believe completely what you're saying. I think COVID shone a light on ourselves, you know, for a change. And we saw our communities and we saw what they did well, what they didn't do well. I mean, you can take it to various parts of tourism. I mean, Venice and Barcelona saw themselves without overcrowding traffic. England saw itself as what's the future of tourism. So I think it had a huge impact. And I think the other thing that I'm interest in LVEPs. LVEPs are regional type tourism offices, aren't they? Essentially.
Yeah. So we're moving from a situation in England where we've had anywhere between 150 to 200 destination management organizations. And they really vary in their size, their remit, their resources. And as you appreciate, with such a fragmented landscape, it's very difficult for Visit England and other partners and government to be able to make a difference when applied to so many small and overlapping partners. So there was a review done independently by Visit Britain, Visit England's chair, Nick Dubois.
Yep.
He did a very big review paper and said we need to have some rationalization in the destination landscape. And that's where the advent of LVEPs has come about. So they're a subset, but it has really been about forming more partnerships, getting more of these DMOs to work together and become LVEPs collectively. So it is a rationalization of the landscape. And now we have a golden opportunity to work with them on accessibility. So the toolkit is going to give them the framework. And what we want to do is drive greater consistency in how destinations tackle accessibility. So to get our LVEPs behind key initiatives that we're pushing, that can collectively, if every LVEP is working on those initiatives, it will move the dial for England.
It's interesting. The LVEP model and or the regional tourism model, it's been tried in so many places over the world, and it's been iteratively made better and better. When we started doing it in Canada, our early lesson came from watching what they'd done in British Columbia. They had, I think, 11 regional tourism offices, LVEP type things. The interesting thing about them is when they came in, and you got to remember, this is, you know, early 2000s, they were still highly focused on marketing. 10 years later, when they built them in Ontario, we had the real opportunity to say, you know, the one thing we're not missing in tourism is enough marketing dollar going around. In fact, 80% of the dollar going around is marketing dollar. So what can we do differently? And I think LVEPs or regional tourism offices had a much more open mind and a broader purview to talk about things like accessibility, sustainability, community engagements, where DMOs, I mean, you know, they're a 100-year-old product. And let's face it, the majority of their business was around sales, advertising, and marketing, right? So I'm excited with these regional offices. And we see it here. We see it around the world. We see it going on in France and Italy as well, regional offices. I think they bring a fresh, open-minded perspective that uncorks one really important piece of information. Tourism is a massive economic developer in most destinations that engage it. And it really needs to come in to the 21st century in terms of creating the networks it needs to sustain, doing partnerships that allow it to continue so it's not single source funding. So I'm excited about the LVEP. So I think it helps especially programs like accessibility, equity, and diversity and inclusion.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you. So LVEPs are rounded organizations that are far from just marketing organizations. So for an LVEP to be accredited by us, they have to be doing the whole destination development and marketing piece, because that's absolutely key. You know, we need bodies on the ground working very closely with all of the players in the tourism supply chain, and destination management organizations, LVEPs, they are the best organizations to be doing that. So just going back to the subject of the day, I think accessible and inclusive tourism, ultimately, when you boil it down, is about welcome. And that's exactly what our industry is all about. We're all about the welcome, the experience. And if you put that at the heart of the accessibility piece, it's about listening to every guest, every visitor, and saying, how can I make this experience, this stay, this visit better for you? So it needs a very individual approach, because impairment, health condition, accessibility, it is very individual. So it's not about making any assumptions here. It all goes back to having that dialogue and just providing good customer service and a good welcome.
Well, talk about that for a second, because you told me a really fascinating story a couple of weeks ago. We don't see the world through the eyes of someone who's challenged with whichever challenges they have. And we make assumptions about them. We make assumptions about beds and bathrooms and bars and toilets. But you told me a really interesting story about a 5-star experience. And I think it was a friend of yours, no names mentioned, who talked to you about dealing with one of his guests at an absolute 5-star project. Tell us that story, because I think it really sort of makes the scales drop away from your eyes when it comes to this thing.
Yes, absolutely. So this was a hotel operator who was extending a stay to one of his close colleagues. And this is a colleague from industry who's worked in hotels for many, many years and became disabled quite later on in his life. So he came as a wheelchair user to stay at his friend and colleague's hotel. On checkout, the hotel manager said, you know, how was your stay? Was it a great stay? And he gave the honest feedback and said, you know what, it wasn't a 5-star stay for me, unfortunately. And he gave some very specific feedback that just hit a note. It created what I call a eureka moment in that hotel manager's mind. And we need these eureka moments to be happening daily. So his eureka moment was, well, I want everyone, every guest to have a five-star experience with me. Clearly, for some people with access requirements, we're not quite getting it right, and they're not getting the five-star experience. So it started dialogue. It started conversation. And then the disabled individual started to work with the hotel and give them lots of insight, lots of feedback, worked on their product, worked on their information, because the information is so key. Every business needs to give quality, detailed information about their accessibility, and destinations need to shine a light on products.
Let's talk about how they give that information, because you made a really good point on that. But in this case, this is a five-star hotel with a complete focus on luxuriated service. And the GM, when he was talking, really asked the question, expecting to get the usual sort of, yeah, it's a great hotel, what an experience. And it was, you know, thanks to the fellow who had the chutzpah to say, no, actually, it's not. If you're physically or otherwise challenged, this is not a five-star hotel.
Absolutely. And I think it helped that there was respect between the two individuals. The feedback was given in a very constructive way. And they have a fantastic spa facility. But actually, if there's no hoisted provision into the pool, well, that right. fantastic part of the five-star hotel is totally off limits to this person. So, yeah, we want to see more of those eureka moments, don't we?
Okay, so you talked about also amenities, and you have a really key point on this in your presentation. It comes up all the time. Don't ask me about my disability and then work around it. I'm a human being. Tell me what you've got, and I'll figure it out.
Absolutely.
How does that work?
So we've done so much research and listening to disabled travelers on this very topic of information. And, you know, it doesn't help to prescribe. You know, sometimes we do that naturally because we think it's useful. So, you know, our attraction isn't suitable for, you know, don't prescribe. It health conditions impact everyone differently day to day. People with the same condition can have very different accessibility requirements. So the premise here is that businesses, destinations are describing a venue or a destination's accessibility with photographs, with detail, with measurements where appropriate, and empowering people. This is what it's all about. Information empowers people, but don't bury it on your website. So I remember a survey pre-COVID that we did. 63% of serviced accommodation businesses in England that had some features and facilities on accessibility were not promoting those features. So they were hiding those features away for many different reasons. Maybe a fear that those features weren't quite good enough. And if they did sing about them, then they were setting themselves up to be shot down. But we have to hit that fear head on. And we have to say to businesses, you have some good features on accessibility, but they're only going to be useful if you communicate them. So the information piece is very important and always a key part of our guidance and my presentations when I speak to businesses and destinations.
Yeah, it's a really welcome piece in your presentation. All right, we're coming up on 27 minutes. We're talking about a world in which destination organizations in the next few years have to really embed themselves in their community. They have to become essentially known, catalytic, and effective. Now, there's many of them that already are, but they're all struggling for ways to deliver value to stakeholders. And those stakeholders are myriad. There's the original, you know, sort of usual suspects, hotels, restaurants, attractions, accommodations, but there's many more, especially in the accessibility field. But as you look at your work over the past sort of 4 or 5 years, and you remember you're talking to probably about 900 destinations worldwide right now. They're all struggling with the same thing. How do we build the networks we need to achieve the kind of objectives we're talking about in the next 10 years? So just in rounding out this discussion, any of what you've learned that can help destination organizations be more relevant, be more focused, and be more essential in their communities? Last word to you.
Absolutely. I think destinations can learn a lot from each other. There are a lot of destination organizations that are getting to grips with this, not just in England and the UK, but throughout Europe and throughout the world. So put on your listening ears, you know, seek out those peers and talk to them about what they've done. Most people in this space are happy to share. You know, let's learn from others. Let's start and dial up the conversation that we're having with disabled people and put it in our DNA. You know, let's make sure this is right up there in our destination development plans. Put it central, and you'll start to see the benefits come through in your destination. And then you'll want to run with this, and you'll be enthused, and you'll be impassioned, and you'll want to really, you know, keep delivering over the years and build on that early success.
Well, in an example of that, I'm going to throw a link into some of your presentations, because I think they really do humanize this issue and make it easy and accessible, pun intended. So listen, thanks for that. It's always great to talk to you. Hopefully we can spend some FaceTime over the next year talking about this stuff. But thanks again for being a guest.
Thanks for having me, David.